Hi, it's Joel, your host here. In this very special three-part mini-series, we focus on the stories of three people all from the same family and how different autoimmune diseases have significantly impacted their lives. All from the United States, you will hear from Kevin Gibbons, who has relapsing remitting multiple sclerosis, his partner Lauren Gibbons, who lives with ulcerative colitis, and Kevin's brother Matthew, who has been diagnosed with Crohn's disease. At the time of recording, we didn't plan to tell this story as one, and as such, each episode can be listened to in isolation or out of order should you wish. But as this family, one by one, stepped forward and came onto the show to share their lived experiences, it touched me on a level that even after years of being privileged enough to have a front row seat with people sharing their most personal stories, still moved me, much to my surprise. Coming from a family with a history of multiple autoimmune diseases myself, their shared experiences resonated with me and how I, as a big brother, share the pain and feelings of helplessness with my siblings who live with other inflammatory conditions. I wanted to draw the listener's attention to the fact that these are three people in one family enduring so much at such young ages. I felt I owed it to them who, for the majority, were bravely telling their story publicly for the first time, to do their stories justice and give them the platform they deserve. If you enjoy these episodes, please do subscribe and leave a review wherever you listen, and thank you for listening. I would like to welcome a very special lady onto the show that to some of you regulars know already, so this feels like a very unneeded introduction, but Lauren Gibbons is somebody who's just been a pillar of our Twitch stream and community for the last year for 2023. Absolute ray of sunshine. Am I embarrassing you already, Lauren? Absolutely. Like, so we don't get found by anyone over on Twitch. Twitch people are looking for people playing computer games. They're not looking for people making conversations about chronic illness. So when Lauren dropped in to say that they found us because of that, and they fitted straight in, it was really special. So guys, welcome in Lauren Gibbons, also known as a choir in our Twitch community. Yes. How are you doing today, Lauren?
I'm good, how are you?
Yes, I'm good, and I appreciate it's probably quite early on a Sunday morning where you are.
So yeah, it's like 11 a.m.
Yes, thank you so much for joining us. I really do appreciate it. And it's love. I stress really badly about these conversations because I feel like I have to do everybody justice and everything else. But this one, I've just generally been looking forward to catching up with somebody I now consider a friend on camera for the first time. We've had lots of voice chat, so in Discord and things over the year. But yeah, it's just lovely to get you on. And I know you and my wife have also become quite close as well.
So oh, yes.
Really, really looking forward to I think you're pretty much the only person that would get her back on an airplane. So well done for that. So for anyone that doesn't know you or is here because they watch on a Sunday night and don't come to the Twitch streams, do you want to just maybe tell us a little bit about who you are, where you're from, etc.?
Yeah, my name is Lauren Gibbons. I am 27 years old, and I currently live in Washington State in the United States. I'm originally from the South, moved around quite a lot. But yeah, I'm currently getting my vet tech license in Washington State. So yeah, and I'm pet sitting. So that's fun.
Cool. And I feel like we should also mention that you are making up the hat trick of people from your family.
Oh, yes.
They've been on the show. So maybe just for anyone listening to the podcast in order or anything, explain the connection between you and previous
guests. Yeah, Kevin Gibbons is my husband. He's an MS patient, and his brother Matthew came on here earlier and he has Crohn's.
Fabio, so thank you, a massive thank you to the entire Gibbons clan for joining us and sharing their experiences. And I know that you you probably are not being as comfortable or haven't maybe shared the story as much as other people we've had on the show and everything, so I really appreciate that. And I also I took that as like a little bit of a compliment to our community that you felt like it was a safe place to do that, and so thank you so much.
Yeah, we're just having a chat.
Yeah, so thank you so much for coming on sharing, because I know when you first start doing that it doesn't come naturally, and you know it takes a long while for that to sort of I don't know, just get a little bit sort of the novelty to sort of wear off. So thank you for joining us. So
yeah, I'm being perceived right now. So
you're doing brilliantly. You're doing brilliantly. And just picture us like we're on Discord having voice chat whilst playing Minecraft like we would normally. That's all you need to worry about. So you're joining us tonight as an ulcerative colitis sort of patient. I don't like using the word patient, but I failed to find a better one yet. But so do you want to maybe just explain, because we've had people, well, I think one of your relations recently talking about Crohn's. So before we get onto your diagnosis journey, do you want to just maybe tell us a little bit about what UC is and maybe how it differs from Crohn's, if you're able to?
Yeah, ulcerative colitis is an autoimmune disorder that attacks the mucosal lining of your large intestine. It differs from Crohn's because Crohn's can attack your entire GI system. And sometimes it's hard to differentiate in the beginning, you know, if you have ulcerative colitis or if you have Crohn's. But so far, the rest of my GI system is okay. It's just my colon that's been affected.
Okay. And from what sort of age did that start? How did you first sort of recognize it?
I first got diagnosed at 18. It was my freshman year of college. So that was rough. Yeah. I was just going to college, eating college food, stressed out from schoolwork. You know, I moved far away from my family, didn't really have many friends, and then just started bleeding one day from my rectum. That was fun. Yeah.
And I was just going to say, it just stuck with me when you said about freshman, because we've had that theme so many times, around that age. I had my first major flare. I had arthritis as a kid, but it came back with a bang when I was like 18. And
yeah, typically it hits at around 18 or like 40.
Does it really? Yeah. Because it just, like I say, just being a complete layman, it just feels like a theme that comes up whenever we're talking about autoimmune diseases on here, that sort of 18 to 21 period where it sort of, kicks off. And maybe we'll get into that because obviously the title of the show is about hinting around stress and everything. So at the time, did you feel like there was anything that might have triggered it? Did it feel like it was completely out of the blue?
I was, stressed from leaving home and, people I knew. I was alone. I don't do very well meeting new people, stuff like that. That came about. I was also having a little bit of PTSD from some childhood trauma as well. So that all was kind of bundled up together and I was just not mentally doing well. And then that's when my bowels started going as well.
And what was the sort of time period then before? Because that must have been terrifying. Like, I can't imagine that isn't like your normal onset symptom that's like going to come on great. It's going to cause alarm pretty much instantly, isn't it?
Yeah, it pretty much just came on quickly. It was like a month into freshman year. Like, it was like September when I started bleeding and cramping a lot. I couldn't keep food down. I lost like 20 pounds over the course of like a month or two, like just couldn't keep food down and everything hurt. So I remember going to the ER, having my roommate drive me to the ER. And they were like, oh yeah, there's a lot of bleeding. They didn't believe me at first because I'm a woman. So they were like, oh, maybe the bleeding's coming from the other end. And it's like, no, I'm pretty sure I am bleeding rectally. Like, I know the difference. But they still had me go to the gyno and check and make sure that everything's okay there. So then I was finally able to see a GI doctor after that. It just happened very quickly. Went to a lot of different hospitals, had to go home for a bit because I just kept bleeding and they couldn't stop the bleeding. So from September when I got diagnosed, I had my first surgery that December. So it was just months.
Okay.
Yeah, it was very, very quick.
Yeah. And that seems to be a theme. So I know when we talked about Crohn's, that was similar, I suppose, because of the weight loss and everything else. It's maybe treated a lot differently to somebody that's presenting with like an inflamed joint or something. So I suppose at least you got the support. But I suppose going through that experience, if stress played a part, that must have just been fueling it, especially when you're being sent to doctors to sort of rule out other things, because your mind just goes places, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And did you feel like there was then that escalation once that sort of investigation period started, in terms of like, because you were getting more stressed, did it?
I was definitely getting more stressed. I had to start staying in the hospital, which sucks. have to be in there like a week at a time. I ended up having to have 3 blood transfusions. Oh, wow. Because the first 2 didn't take. I just kept bleeding. So they did a scope and they're like, yeah, your entire colon is ulcerated. And they did biopsies in like November, I think. And they were like, yeah, it's precancerous at this point. So like, you can either try to manage this some more, or we can just go ahead and take your colon out. I was like, go for it. You know, if I'm going to stop being in pain, you know, stop bleeding, then might as well.
And what age were you when I
was 18. And it was a 3-part surgery. Yeah. My first surgery was in December. Second part was in February. And then the third part was in April. And I did have to have a colostomy bag for those 4 months.
Yeah. And how, you know, what was, did support look like whilst you were going? Because that's traumatic. You know, that's not.
I mean,
not,
you know, mind. Kevin and I actually we just started dating like in high school before that. So he was going to school in a different state. So that also added to my stress because, you know, he was far away, couldn't help. He was doing finals and things like that. But I got a lot of support from my family. Yeah. They were there to help pick everything up. Like personally, I don't really remember too much from those months because I was just, you know, trying to survive. But yeah.
I can't imagine. And like, obviously they were treating the physical. Did you have anything sort of like in terms of support for the mental side of trying to get your head around
that? Not really at that time. I just kind of was like, okay, like this is what I have to do, you know, compartmentalize everything, throw in the back of my mind, like I have to do this. I've had therapy since then, which has helped a lot, trying to work through all of that. But at the time, it was just kind of crazy and just trying to get through each day.
And obviously we talk, you'll know from previous shows, we talk a lot on here about that whole holistic approach and joined up and multidisciplinary thing. And if it just feels like another example where that should kind of be offered hand in hand with the physical treatment,
exactly.
Shouldn't it?
You know,
to go through that at 18, not only with the symptoms you were having and how mentally difficult that must have been to process, because I can't imagine anyone handling that well and like how terrifying that must be. And then the surgery on top of that, just mad that there isn't okay, here's the physical treatment, here's the mental health support.
Yeah, exactly.
And then plus, obviously, we know if Kevin's been on the show that he's got things he's dealing with as well. So you guys sound like you're really fortunate. You've got that support network. I know distance was a big issue there. And how big a part did that support? I know you touched on a little bit there. How big a part did that sort of support network play in getting you through all of that? And I suppose not just
I don't know what I would have done if it hadn't been for my family being there and everything. Because, you know, I'd have to spend at least a week in the hospital at a time. And by the 3rd or 4th day, I was like, I don't even care if I'm alive tomorrow. Like, I just want to jump out this window. I don't want to be in pain anymore. Yeah. Like, I just don't care.
Yeah, and that's it. You forget about the pain side, don't you? Because it's so, you know, such a big thing with the surgery and the symptoms and the bleed and everything else. You forget that also underneath all of that is massive pain and discomfort as well.
Yeah, like when they did my surgery, they had to cut through all of my abdominal muscles all the way down. So learning to walk after that was difficult.
You say that in a one line. It feels like such I don't really know how to ask the question of like about how that looked when you're just like, yeah, and I also had to learn to walk again. So I think it says a lot for your
it is what it is.
That's just mad. And I guess that bit isn't talked about enough, isn't it? You know, like, you know, for me, I've got no real, you know, I've got people in my family who have had UC or Crohn's, and it's something that I have to get regularly tested for because of my medical background. But you associate it with the issues with, you know, bowels and bleeding and cramping and stuff. You forget about how invasive and how much it touches and life impacting it is. So when you had the surgery, you how long did it take you to learn to walk again? Just out of interest, I'm being nosy.
I mean, it was like a week or two, but like, you know, all of my abdominal muscles had been cut through, so I had to like learn how to use them again, which is not fun.
So it's like I think we're programmed, aren't we? You go to hospital, you get stuff fixed, but you come out with them with all those other issues that you've then got to try and manage, haven't you? And
Yeah. Waking up from my first surgery, it was definitely wild knowing that I had a bag on my body. I didn't even look at it for the first day. I was like, I can't even mentally handle this right now. I got used to it eventually because I had to have it for 4 months, but it was a big shock to have your intestine hanging outside of your body.
Yeah. And that was one of the things I was going to ask you about, like that mental adjustment to that. And like, how did that, especially being the age you were and everything, and we know how difficult that period is anyway, going to university and being a young adult, like how did that affect, like, not just your body confidence, but the way you saw yourself, your, you know, socially?
I mean, I definitely hated the way I looked, but at the same time, it was like, okay, but I'm alive, so I can't be too upset. This is just how it is now. But yeah, it still sucked.
You're phenomenal just to say that life sucks, and then you just
as I say all the time, shit happens. So
it's an amazing outlook, because as somebody that went for a long while, like, of grief and changes, you know, because my condition is quite fluid, it isn't as like drastically changing as that. And I, you know, I'm often like a bear with a sore head because I'm, you know, stressing about what I used to be able to do or what things used to look like. That must have held you in good stead, having that mindset to be able to almost say, yeah, life is shit, and then I'm gonna move forward. What did that look like in reality in terms of adjusting, though, in terms of time frame? Because there must have been a period before.
I stayed home from school that second semester. I didn't go back. I did try to go back sophomore year, but with treatments and everything, I just ended up dropping out of that college because it was just too far away, and with all the treatments and everything I was going through, I was still, you know, dealing with ulcerative colitis. You know, I did have a total colectomy. I don't have the majority of my colon, but I do still have that little inch or two left of the rectum, so I don't have incontinence issues.
Yeah.
But that still has ulcerative colitis, so I'm still having to take medication to, you know, kill that. Eventually I might have to have another surgery and have to have a bag for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
But right now, treatment's going well. So,
okay. And and so you hinted there's still some stuff, but it's fairly well controlled, I suppose, is it?
Yeah.
And what does treatment look like for UC?
I'm currently taking Entyvio, which is an intravenous infusion. So I have to go get an IV catheter every 8 weeks, and I sit at the hospital for like 30 minutes. While the infusion's going, and then I go home.
Okay. And does that cause any side effects itself? Or
in the beginning, I would get very fatigued. But as I've had it now for 2 or 3 years now, and I'm fine with it. But I did get very fatigued in the beginning, just because it's a very, you know, powerful drug.
Yeah. And I imagine with the condition being autoimmune as well, I imagine you get a bit of fatigue with that as well. So, again, it's another thing that isn't talked about a lot. So is that something
exactly? Yeah, brain fog, fatigue. Yeah, it's a big thing.
Yeah, and yeah, people don't think beyond the sort of obvious with these conditions. So I think it's important that we mention it. So in terms of, like, obviously it sounds like it onset at a time when things were like really stressful for you, and then obviously you go through this massive life change and health condition, which must only fuel that. Like, at what point did you start sort of, I suppose, putting two and two together about what the trigger might be? And also, I suppose, is there any other triggers that's worth talking about for anyone else that's listening interested?
I mean, just like stress in general, obviously. You know, I've been going to therapy for the past few years. I'm now on mental health medication. I take Prozac every day to help level things out. But, you know, with all the stress growing up, as I was talking with my therapist, they said that the cortisol builds up in your body, and that can make all your hormones and everything go out of whack. So since I was dealing with that trauma for like 11, 12 years, that much cortisol just built up, and that also kind of tipped off the autoimmune disorder. But, you know, with therapy and, you know, getting help and being on medication, that's also helping, you know, my mind and my body.
And like I said, sorry to ask about it, but it just feels like we get so many people that have that sort of as a comorbidity almost, but until it's seen as a comorbidity and treated as such. And like I said, when you were going for all of that, you didn't get offered that support. It's just, I find it frustrating. So I want to keep bringing it up. And I'd love to get a medical professional. If anyone's watching this or listening to this back, a medical professional that would like would be comfortable talking about stress and how it could be a trigger, because I don't know, it still feels like it's quite taboo in some areas. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, when I went for a big change in 2019, I become a dad, I was blaming doctors when my condition flared. Mm-hmm. I was blaming treatment changes. 4 years, mm-hmm. 4 or 5 years down the line, I'm now understanding, well, I became a new dad. I got no sleep. I had no idea what I was doing. I was completely winging it. I was stressed and tired. And of course I had a flare, but there was no medical professional apart from in the mental health sector where therapists I find over here in the UK will quite happily talk about, you know, stress being a trigger. But when I go see like rheumatologist or dermatologist or whatever, they're all very much about numbers and scales and they want physical data. And then as a patient, you're not really equipped to recognize the links, are you, between stress and so is that, I suppose that was something you sort of tweaked quite quickly, or did it take going to see those therapists for you to sort of make the link?
It's just like, I mean, I did go to a little bit of therapy growing up, but you know, as I got older and, you know, knew more about the disease, knew more about myself, I decided that, you know, therapy is best. You know, if I can get my head right, then the rest of my body will be happier. But yeah,
and I suppose in terms of like getting your head right, you do the therapy and everything, what else do you do to help sort of like manage, like you know, I bang on a lot about escapism and distraction, do you have do you do sort of similar things?
Yeah, like video games, stuff like that. You know, meeting you guys has been awesome. I haven't really had any you know, friends that like, you know, have disorders like me and have had to live with long-term conditions, so it's nice, you know, talking to people with the same issues.
And the fact you can do it without barriers, and it doesn't have to be the same conditions. And you know as well that we've got people in our community that don't have any long-term health conditions, but
they understand.
Yeah, and they like it because they know it's like it's non-judgmental safe space. And I'm going to clip this, Lauren, because like I say, I'm still every week having conversations with patient organizations and charities and various things, trying to get them to wake up to the sort of like, some are better than others, obviously, but that whole peer support kind of thing, because like, you know, you can do radio campaigns and TV adverts and flyers and educational things, but for some of us, I don't know about if, you know, I'm not trying not to put words in your mouth, but like for me, I turn to these things because I want to forget about my condition and be happy and have an hour out of my head. You know what I mean? And like trying to explain to people, I'm not going to ring a helpline. I'm not going to, you know, join a support group where everyone sits in a circle and says about how terrible things are, because sometimes I just want to forget, you know, and I think that's where things like gaming and peer support groups or, you know, or sport or whatever that might be for individuals, I think is important. Yeah. So we're very lucky you found us anyway.
Likewise. And,
yeah, and like I say, it's reciprocal though. It's like, you know, you got help from me, but I know I got help from you. You know, there's times where you've got a totally different outlook to me. I'm a, you know, serial warrior. When you get somebody, you meet somebody that's in sort of like a situation that's, you know, maybe worse than yours or whatever, and they have this attitude, well, life happens, stop trying to buy and things move on. You know what I mean? It's just that.
Yeah. I mean, it took me years to get here, but yes.
And I think that's why you'll be brilliant. The more you share this, you're going to help people. I know you might be nervous tonight, and we're very grateful for you bravely sharing it, because I know how difficult that is.
I just want to help other people who've, you know, unfortunately been through the same thing I have.
And I think as well, it's important for people to know that you don't have to come on and talk about it and be on a stage or do anything like terrifying. You can just be a member of those communities and listen. You know, like there'll be nights, well, you'll know, there'll be nights where I come on to Discord or Twitch or whatever, and I don't really say a lot. I'm just like listening, and then like hopefully that helps somebody else.
Yeah.
There's lots of comments in chat about diet and everything. So it feels like something we should probably touch on.
Yes.
So yeah, it's in terms of like diet, you know, because again, it can be a sore subject for some people. Don't want to be told that what they're doing causes it or anything like that. But I'm guessing there are some obvious sort of triggers.
I mean, Fried Chicken Wednesdays probably didn't help much in college, even though that was the best. So you're not supposed to eat things, or I'm not supposed to eat things that are high in fiber, because I don't have a colon. So I can't eat raw vegetables, raw fruits, things that are like super rough, super spicy foods, you know. I can't eat whole grains. I eat like white bread, things like that, things that are like easily palatable. But I know it's a little different for people who have a colon because, you know, they want the fiber, they need the fiber, but
yeah,
I don't have that. So.
And I suppose with something like UC, that then goalposts move, don't they, depending on what stage you are or what surgery. So
yeah, exactly.
I guess that looks different for different people.
Mm-hmm. It does.
And in terms of like lifestyle, I suppose, what's that changed or how does that differ for you?
Mostly just I have to be aware of a bathroom somewhere. Like I have to make sure that wherever I go, there's a bathroom because sometimes I don't know when I need to go and it just happens. And, you know, I hate going out somewhere and like not knowing the bathroom situation. It's embarrassing.
Yeah. No, that's I could totally relate to that.
Yeah.
It does. And it plays on your mind. Also, it steals from the moment, doesn't it? That sort of thing a little bit, because you know you go to a concert or travel or whatever, and if you've got that sort of considerations to make, it's on your mind, isn't it? You know.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, it's like everyone has to go to the bathroom, so. Whatever.
Yeah. Again, that is such a great way of looking at it. It's like we all do it. So what? I know that. I might need to book a one-on-one session with you after this, Lauren.
Okay.
So you can coach me. I just have some Lauren therapy.
How to not give a shit.
That sounds like a great podcast. There, like I can give you plenty of tips, and then you can do it better.
Sweet.
So I suppose like what is the, we maybe touched on a little bit, but like in terms of like outlook, you know, you're on these meds and they seem to be working well and everything's sort of hopefully sort of suspended where it is at the moment. Do you get like, this is being a little bit ignorant, like arthritis, do you get flares and periods of remission or?
I do. Thankfully, I haven't really gotten any since being on this new medication, but every now and then, you know, I can get a little flare if I don't eat the right thing or, you know, if I get way too stressed out. But I'm pretty good at this point about, you know, knowing my triggers and what I should stay away from. You know, alcohol, even like I can't drink very much. It just kills me.
I'm in a similar boat and I've still not got very strong at completely stopping. I'm fine until the summer comes along and it's like barbecue weather and then I turn into a typical British person. just wants to turn into a lobster in the sun and drink alcohol. I'm working on that. But again, that's that moderation thing though, isn't it? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like there's lots that really I have given up. And there's some things that I feel like you need to, like, you know what, you can have a cheat day as long as you're aware of it and you know it's a trigger and you're willing to sort of work around and do what you need to do to minimize the sort of consequences that we're human after all. So in terms of, I suppose big, longer picture in terms of like outlook then. So obviously everything seems to be working well at the minute and you have flares and ups and downs. But in terms of like what is, because I'm being honest, I'm ignorant on this. What is like the outlook for people with UC?
It really depends. Right now I'm doing fine on this medication. If for some reason this medication doesn't work anymore, I can always go to a different one, a more expensive one, of course. But you know, if eventually none of that works out and I just keep having flares, I probably will have to have another surgery so that they can cut back on the little bit that I have. They don't know if they'll be able to reconnect or not. So it would just be like a toss up if I wake up with a bag or not. But, you know, I'm trying to push that off for as long as I can.
And also, you're still a baby. There's plenty of years of medical development and breakthrough and things. Like, look at me. Yeah. When I was a kid with arthritis, biologics weren't even available. They existed.
Yeah,
but they
with like
available.
The COVID-19 pandemic, they know so much more about autoimmune diseases now.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, no, it definitely looks like that really made us take a big jump forward. Like I was literally only recently in a research lab looking at that sort of stuff, and it really did made people work a bit more joined up as well. I have a lot of hope for that sort of thing in the future. So try and, in between all your not giving a shit, try and hold on to that on the back.
Yeah, exactly.
we all have a wobble, don't we? You know, that's totally cool to have those days where it just all gets too much and I'm guessing, does resilience play a part for you, both whether it's mental or physical, depend on how many sort of plates you're spinning with your condition, as how much you can cope?
Yeah, pretty much. You know, my dogs help, my pets help, my husband helps. Yeah. So, you know, having people there for you helps a lot.
And I've got to remember that a lot of people watching this or listening to this back on the podcast won't know you as well as we do in the community. But yet, Lauren has like got a mini zoo going on. It's awesome.
And
we love seeing, we love seeing photos of the animals. I'm particularly fond of the dogs and the ferrets.
Yes.
If you want to see that, guys, head over to our Discord because there are photos. But again, no, it's nice to have that escape, isn't it? Like, I've got a dog for that very reason, because it gets me out of the house even on the bad days where I just want to hide and not.
Yeah, exactly. Not they force you to get out of the house, which is nice.
Yeah, yeah. As an absolute bare minimum, you have to move and get fresh air and see the world a little bit, and that can only be a good thing. So I got distracted by chat because we're all a big fan of Gwen, your dog. I'll always be thrown every time I do a stream and I get a photo of them just sitting in front of the television watching my face. Like, I don't get put off when my family turn up in chat, but I get absolutely thrown by your dogs always watching.
Oh yeah, they know as soon as we turn the TV on, they're like, oh, it's Joel.
That's great. So I feel like I don't know, maybe because we know each other so well, I feel like we've really rattled through that really quickly. Is there anything you want to sort of like say to anyone who's listened to this that like just got diagnosed? Because like just being here listening for the first time, your experience, that felt like an absolute whirlwind from first symptoms to suddenly going to the major surgery and learn to walk. And that like, I can't even imagine how somebody deals with that or gets in that space where they're looking for help. Or is there anything you want to like say to them or like advise them on?
Just that it does get better. Like, I know it seems like it doesn't, but it does. It takes some time and effort, but eventually it does get better and you learn to live with it. Yeah. And, you know, just listen to your doctors.
and like also maybe like on that mental side as well, for people to try and get that in place, because
get help for sure. Just talk to someone. It's nice to just talk to someone who, you know, doesn't know anything about you, doesn't have any opinions about you, you know, they're just there to help and listen.
And unfortunately it does take us, well, far too many of us, too long, doesn't it, to
realize
we need. I guess I should probably ask, like, at what point did you feel like you needed to ask for help? Like, was it really obvious or was it other people pushing you? Because I'm the latter of.
I think it was kind of me knowing that I'm just not myself. And I was very hard on myself, you know, very negative outlook on life. I was like, things aren't so bad. I need to get better about this.
I can't even imagine a negative, Lauren. So, from the person we know, then well done for recognizing that, though. Because I say so many of us don't. I have to get to the place where I've got people literally forcing me to pick up the phone and go get help. So I think that says a lot.
Yeah, but it's nice just to talk to someone who doesn't know you, doesn't know anything about you, and has no opinions or judgments or anything like that.
And also that perspective shift, I find, helps me. Like, that isn't, people think when you go to see the therapist, it's because you're broken or something. But sometimes you just need someone to help you see it from a different angle, don't you?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So I feel like we should probably end by talking a little bit. I know we touched upon it earlier with us, like the peer support and the stream and stuff and that sort of thing. But like, we now found ourselves from you finding us on Twitch to now we've had three, including you, family members on the Chronic Pain Club talk show. You and your other half play Minecraft with us weekly.
Yes. Yes, we do.
You're literally part of the furniture now. So like, and like for me, like I say, we get people come and go in this community all the while, and like we, like I always say, we're here, we'll always be here in NS, whether people want to use us or not, and you know, take it how they want it, and help them benefit. Like, what would you say like has been the biggest thing about finding a peer support community for you? And it doesn't have to be a big sell about us. Forget I'm here. Forget the Joel versus arthritis bit. Just in general, what's been the sort of biggest benefit for you guys, you know, finding a peer support community?
I don't know. It's just nice talking with other like-minded people, people who don't judge you, who understand if, you know, you have to take a day, you know, away, or if you don't want to talk, if you just want to escape for a while, like, they just understand.
And also, I suppose I'd add to that as well, that it doesn't then matter where you are in the world.
Like, it's
borders, isn't it? You know, like, we've learned so much about your part of the world. And
yes, exactly.
You're slowly learning so about UK slang, which is like a foreign language for some people. So you've done brilliant in tolerating us with me coming out of my Norfolk sounds, and then other people in chat coming out with something from the north, or, you know, like if you're from Manchester, you're using totally different phrases to me. So well done for
tolerating. I'm
learning
so much.
And we will sort out a US community meetup. We have to make that happen. I don't know how. Nia Cheeks is going to need a lot of medication and therapy to get on a 10-hour flight. But we will sort something out, because, yeah, anyone who's sort of listening to this or watching and not know what I mean, our community has got to the point now where it's so strong and we all consider each other such good friends that we've now just had our second community meetup. So the first one was in Norwich, which was my hometown. Last weekend, we were in Birmingham meeting up all the people in the Middle Country. And it wasn't just people in the Middle Country. We had people like Snuffle come up from London and other places. So sorry, Snuffle, I've just given away your location then. I hope that wasn't too top secret. That small, really specific place of London. So it's just amazing. Like, when we started this a couple of years ago, if you said that we'd be sitting here with like people from all around the world in chat, talking to amazing people like yourself, Lauren, that I now consider a friend, who I wouldn't think twice about picking up the phone or jumping on Discord with if I needed support or ask you something or to vent. I just think that's really special. And then for us to then start doing that as real in-person physical connections, it's just, I think that's phenomenal. And it's the strongest part of our community, you know, and we'll make it happen. But as Kevin's put, Vegas would be, it would be incredible. That would,
Come down to that Green Day concert.
Yeah, I must admit, I was on the working on the basis when I said that the Green Day would do a world tour with that. Vegas, I might have to get Nia Cheeks to sort of travel around Europe on a plane first before I say the far side of America. But we'll sort something. We'll sort something.
Just give her some Benadryl. I'm sure it'll be fine.
Yeah. Well, just for our honeymoon, I don't know if she's going to thank me for sharing this, but just for our honeymoon, she had to get some medical assistance, shall we say, to get on the plane. And I've never seen somebody manage to talk to half of the plane in a 2-hour flight. Like, literally,
amazing.
I think those people were all best friends by the time we got off. So we obviously agreed with her.
That's awesome.
So, guys, I think I'm going to let you go just because I'm conscious that you spend a lot of time with me anyway, and I'm bored of my own voice, so how bored you must be by this point. I just want to say on behalf of everyone watching, and we had some incredible numbers watching as well tonight, and I'm sure the podcast will equally reflect that, just a massive thank you for sharing that, because it's not like you're coming on as somebody with a condition that people can relate to, like maybe, I don't know, chronic migraines or something, not to do any of them disservice. To share what you're sharing, a condition that's quite sort of intimate and traumatic and all the stuff that you've been through. And I know you were quite nervous ahead of tonight because this isn't like a thing that's natural. You literally couldn't tell guest Lauren that you were.
Thanks.
You were brilliant. And it was just like two friends chatting as it should be. So thank you so much for joining us. Where can people find you? Or you got any sort of final thoughts you want to give to the audience?
No, I mean, you can find me on Instagram or Discord. I'm happy to chat with anyone. If you have UC, you don't have UC, you know.
Brilliant.
You just need a friend.
and that pretty much sums up our community, doesn't it? We don't really care whether you've got a condition or not. If you want to sort of support other human beings.
If you're
beings,
a decent person, then
that's it, yeah. And guys, if you're watching this or listening to it back on the podcast, head to my links in any of my bio anyway, you know, in the podcast notes or wherever it is you're listening or watching, and you'll find a link to our Discord where you'll find all these awesome human beings from the Gibbons family that have all been on the show now. I feel like we should probably say, right, everyone else in the Gibbons family can relax. I'm not going to come calling to get you on the show.
Yeah, the Gibology is completed.
Yeah, so it is now finished now. So everyone can stand down and just breathe. It'll be absolutely fine. I'll find another family to pick on. Very much massive thank you, Lauren, for sharing your story tonight, and also for the guys
for
that came
me.
Before you as well. Like, I genuinely appreciate you opening up. Just massive thank you. And enjoy the rest of your evening. I might even speak to you later on today on Twitch.
See you on Minecraft.
Yes. Brilliant. Thank you so much for joining us, Lauren.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye.